some people may get this mixed up and think that treatment is just you go inside four walls, you process your feelings, talk about like, you know, triggers and coping skills and stuff like that, which is all vital. I mean, very important. But you, they also have individual sessions that they are sitting with a primary therapist discussing their deepest, darkest secrets or to whatever extent they want to. But there's also work that the therapist and the clinical team will provide these clients to do outside of the four walls. So it's not something that a client's just expected to show up, sign a sign-in sheet, and do the group and the individual session. Oftentimes, we load them up with assignments to do. And that's something, it's just like school. You know, I mean, if you're going to go to school to learn whatever, you're going to get assignments that you have to complete. Addiction treatment, it's the same thing.
You're listening to Real Recovery Talk with your host, Tom Conrad. Every day, Tom helps guide people like you who have loved ones dealing with addiction. You're most likely frustrated with the situation, worried your loved one won't get better, and concerned you're not doing enough to help. This show will help you understand the tremendous struggle of addiction from your loved one's perspective. You'll hear stories of recovery, which will give you hope. And you'll understand the limits to what you can and can't do to help those you love. Tom is a certified addictions counselor who's successfully winning his own battle with drug addiction and alcoholism and has helped many others win theirs as well. It's time now for Real Recovery Talk.
Here we are, Real Recovery Talk. I am your host, Tom Conrad. In today's episode, we have Benjamin B.
What's happening, everybody?
All right. So first things first, we do need to apologize. We have not released an episode in a couple of weeks and not going to make many excuses other than we're busy and we didn't have any episodes in the can, so they did not get released. So that is our apologies, but we are pretty busy here at Rock Recovery Center. As you all know, we run the day-to-day operations for a substance abuse treatment center, and that sometimes takes priority over the podcast because this is something that we just do because we enjoy it, and it's not something that's part of our job description or anything like that. It's something that we enjoy, and we're able to get you free content. So, but we have made a pact to one another,
fact
that we are not going to miss another episode. And if we do, you have our permissions to unsubscribe and don't listen to us anymore. But we know you wouldn't do that. So, but we are going to get some episodes recorded and in the can. That way, if we do anticipate missing a week, something will be released. So, also, go to realrecoverytalk.com. You can find every single episode that we have ever released. This episode is number 150, so there's a lot to choose from. Topics range, but they all revolve around addiction, drug addiction, sex addiction, alcoholism, food addiction, you name it, it's there. Everything addiction. And you can also reach out to us, Tom at realrecoverytalk.com and Ben at realrecoverytalk.com. Leave us likes, reviews, shares, all that happy stuff. And that is it. Let's go. All right, Ben. So today we are going to discuss what it looks like making progress when people get into early sobriety and what are some of the potential pitfalls that we see, especially with people that, let's just keep it at the 1 to 3 months range, because a lot of times people are in treatment for the first 3 months of their sobriety. So we want to discuss what are some things that we look at, that how we measure somebody's progress, and what we also look at to see where maybe they're having pitfalls or where we see that they're falling short. And so we've narrowed it down to a few things. So let's just get right into one of the first things that we think is very important for our clients.
We actually discussed this yesterday. Every Monday, we have a big clinical meeting where we sit down and we talk with the therapist, the case managers, the operations team, and get all the insight that we can on every single client one at a time. You know, that way we're cohesive as a team, but there, on occasion is a pattern of, I think that the big one that jumped out yesterday is video games. You know, and I'm a believer, whether in early recovery or several years, I've seen this time and time again. But man, video games is an addiction for some people, you know, and I believe that it really can sidetrack the recovery process. You know, I can directly correlate it to a few pretty sad stories. You know, it's a if I just give some real examples, you know, we will have clients that come in here. And the tough part is, and we were discussing this yesterday, I want to be transparent about it, you know, there's a lot of like detoxes out there that, you know, people are sick and going through withdrawals, and they have to be there till they're medically cleared. They're not allowed to exercise because of the medical risk, and they don't want to get sued if somebody gets hurt because they're coming off of a medical taper of some sort, to come off benzodiazepines, alcohol, heroin, whatever the case may be. But basically, you know, a lot of these places, they'll have gaming systems in every room. And because that's, unfortunately, detox process, what you're doing, sitting around it and playing a lot of video games. But I think it's really, really important to kind of cut that off after detox, when the real treatment gets going. You know, not that the medical side isn't the real treatment, but the beyond that, the long-term recovery and those aspirations. We watch it time and time again, clients getting sidetracked and partaking in unhealthy sleeping patterns because of video games. We've had several cases where, you know, we work on a case-by-case basis. You know, it can't be a blanket really for a community, because some people play an hour of video games a week, and that's totally okay if that's something you enjoy to do for an hour. But then we've had clients too who literally will not do their assignments from their therapist. They'll skip going to meetings. They'll miss appointments. They'll miss their one-on-one sessions and claim they're not feeling well. But then you see them at home playing away on video games, and we take those video games and we watch people get right on track. It's crazy how that works.
Video games, I think, is something that it's navigated as best as it can be. And I'm with you, Ben, that like you can't make a decision for the whole community based off of one person's actions. And it's not something that we're not against video games by any stretch of the imagination, but what we are against is it hindering people's progress. And that's what we see, is people, they get sucked into these video games, and it could be an Xbox or a PlayStation or a computer game. And they'll literally sit in front of their screens for hours on end. Now, you may be listening and thinking to yourself, well, you know, this seems like it could be an operational issue. Like, why aren't you monitoring that? Or why aren't you taking the measures to prevent that? And although, yes, you are right, it is more difficult than that. It's because we are technically an outpatient level of care. You know, we don't have, like when we transport people to groups or to doctor's appointments or to individual sessions and stuff like that, if a client doesn't need to be at the center, he can or she can stay at the housing component, and they technically are allowed to do what they want. And they'll sit there and they'll play video games for 3 hours because we don't have the eyes there to be able to observe that.
I'm glad you brought that up, Tom, because I think it's really important for me to mention, super, super important and imperative, that we want to see this behavior too. You know, if we work in a facility where, let's say we ban video games, and somebody goes through 90, 120 days of treatment, and they get home and all of a sudden they have their gaming system, what ends up happening? They get their hands on that thing, and then it's something that has not been addressed. And I bring this up time and time again in the podcast. Like, we want to see these behaviors. You know, our version of inpatient here at Rock is the PHP program, which it's inpatient. And Tom was just mentioning that we do a lot of outpatient, intensive outpatient, where people are still coming to group anywhere from 5 days a week to 1 day a week as they taper off through the program. But those intensive outpatient hours and level of care, those are the toughest, in my opinion. That's where the rubber meets the road. And I'm not a believer in putting somebody in four walls and restricting them from all access to the outside world, because then it gives us no opportunity to see how they're going to react and respond to the outside world. You know, that's what detox and the basically detox and what's referred to as residential, which is like in the same building, it's just extended days on a detox. Like, that's what that's intended for. When somebody's having extremely high cravings because they're going through withdrawals, yes, keep them locked in four walls. But if you want to grow in your recovery and not only learn the tools, but have the opportunity to apply these tools, you have to be able to face this stuff. You know, I would be, just from that aspect of growth, I wouldn't want to ban video games because I want to know the truth about people and what their behavior truly looks like. I don't want some version of them that I'm creating, you know, that's not organic by putting parameters on what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do. Now, obviously, we have a lot of rules and curfews and, you know, we know where all our clients are 24/7, et cetera. A lot of communication going on. Takes a big team to do that. Cohesive team to do that. But yeah, we want to see this stuff happen. We really do, because if we don't address it here, they go home and it falls apart. And that's what we're doing. We're setting them up for long-term success outside of treatment.
And I think that's a good segue into the, one of the next points is one of the biggest things that we look at while somebody is in treatment and how this is going to determine how they're going to do once they leave treatment is what actual progress are they making clinically. And going back to what you were talking about just a minute ago about us having those staff meetings on Mondays, that's a good opportunity for us as a team to review the majority of all the clients that we have. And during that process, what we do as a team is we discuss what clients are making good progress clinically. Now, because clinically, a client is only in clinical hours, they're only receiving clinical services, you know, between groups, individual sessions, and case management, 30, 35 hours a week. You know, if they're at the, our highest level of care, you know, they'll have maybe 30 hours. So we need to discuss and see what they are doing during those 30 hours to utilize treatment. And what we see a lot of times is people will come in, they're gung-ho, they understand that this is an optimal time for them to work on themselves or themselves and to work on what is fueling their addiction and really want to get the most out of treatment. And then we have the other people that, well, we have maybe the middle of the road. Some days are good, some days are bad, and that oftentimes is influenced by the people that they surround themselves with. And then we have the people that they just are here. They're kind of like going through the motions and not making a whole lot of progress in much of anything. And that extends not only clinically, but in the housing component as well. And that's something that we take a look at very intently, because operations and housing and everything, that's a big part of treatment as well as the clinical. And those things need to overlap. They need to be discussed because, Ben, and we can take just a minute and talk about this, is what we see from clients while they're inside the four walls here at the clinical office versus how they are when they leave here and say they're at the beach with three or four of their good friends.
I think a good point to bring up to, which is exactly what you're talking about, and we hit this in our meeting. We refer to it in the industry and substance abuse treatment as staff splitting. You know, what we end up doing by coming together as an entire team is find out a client said XYZ to their therapist, but then when they're out with our behavioral health tech, they say ABC. And like none of it correlates, you know, they kind of, and that's where those behaviors start to come out. And we're really able to, you know, kind of patch together what's really going on. Because like Tom is saying, you know, I share this all the time. Like I can sit in front of a therapist and tell them everything that they want to know about my intentions, but my actions outside of the clinical office are, in my opinion, what really matters. You know, are you taking what your therapist is suggesting and actually following through on it? And I will tell you, without operational intervention from behavioral health techs and the operations staff, making they're the ones that got they're basically the front line, the eyes. I would tell you, probably, what would you say, 90% of the clients would not do what they say they're going to do if we didn't have eyes on them. And we're on them, you know. You're like, hey, man, you got that assignment from your therapist. You get that done. It's due tomorrow morning. And you've had a week to do it. Like, you know, it's a, and we're on that stuff. I think it's really important. And we're there to help hold them accountable and inspire them too.
So some of the things that we do that we would actually have all of our clients do with their therapists are, some people may get this mixed up and think that treatment is just you go inside four walls, you process your feelings, talk about, like, you know, triggers and coping skills and stuff like that, which is all vital. I mean, very important. But you, they also have individual sessions that they're sitting with a primary therapist discussing their deepest, darkest secrets, or to whatever extent they want to. But there's also work that the therapist and the clinical team will provide these clients to do outside of the four walls. So it's not something that a client's just expected to show up, sign a sign-in sheet, and do the group and the individual session. Oftentimes, we load them up with assignments to do. And that's something, it's just like school. You know, I mean, if you're going to go to school to learn whatever, you're going to get assignments that you have to complete. Addiction treatment, it's the same thing, you know, because a lot of times people come in here and they don't know. They don't know why they're addicted, or they think they know, but they are 100% of the time, they are clueless. That's why they're in treatment. So we give them the assignments, we give them the things that they can do outside of the clinical walls to be able to continue to make progress. And some clients do it and take advantage of it. Some clients don't. And the unfortunate thing is, and Ben, we say this all the time to people, if you don't do these things while you are in treatment, there's not a shot in hell that you're going to do it when you leave treatment. Now, you may think to yourself, well, I'm not going to get assignments from a therapist when I leave treatment, so of course I'm not going to do it, Tom. That's not what I mean. If you can't do your assignments from your therapist, if you can't participate in groups and be an asset to the community and continually making progress while in treatment, that's going to translate to when you leave treatment, you're not going to build a sober support network. You're not going to get into some sort of sober support program, whether that's AA, NA, CA, Celebrate Recovery, whatever it is, Smart Recovery, that won't happen. You won't build a network of people around you. You won't take the time and effort that's needed to continue to learn about your addiction. That's why we make the assignments. That's why we give them out, so you can learn about your addiction. And it also shows your willingness and how much you're willing to invest into this. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, man. I mean, there's so many cases, and Tom and I have been doing this for a long time, you know, where we can predict. Like, we don't have a crystal ball, but we're probably right 95% of the time. You can see when a client is going down the wrong path, you know, and we can see it weeks ahead of time. And, you know, we'll kind of, you know, bring it up to them, whether it be in group, have their therapist present it, whatever the case may be. And so many times they're not naive to the fact, no, I'm doing really good. I don't even want to get high or drunk. And you're like, yeah, but we've got this sixth sense. And let me point out some behaviors and some evidence that's showing you're going down the wrong road. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we just have to wait for the other shoe to drop, which can be a very good thing too. Because they say that it may be a worth a bad case of jitters if we get a full knowledge of our condition, right, Tom? So basically speaking, like, you know, it's there's that thing that gets thrown around that relapse is a part of recovery. I don't agree with that. I really don't. But it is a part of some people's recovery process. You know, I was one of those individuals with every time I relapsed, I learned a new lesson until finally, well, Tom and I will have 10 years this year? Yeah. Each. That's 20 combined. Wow. We were talking about that yesterday. That's crazy too. Not to get sidetracked. But anyway, you know, we want to be able to see the effort that they're willing to put here, because that'll translate to what happens when they go back home.
Now, let's take a minute to discuss, and we see this often, is when people they spend a lot of time focusing on the people around them rather than focusing on the person themselves. You know, what we'll see is what we think is somebody that is making good progress, something might switch in them. And then all of a sudden you see them, they are focusing on the people around them and the surroundings around them rather than themselves. And that for us is a red flag, because basically a client has the potential of just pointing out everybody else's flaws. And if that person would do this, or if you let that person do that, or this person doesn't have to go to that meeting, why should I? Those types of scenarios, we see that rather often too. And that for us is a red flag, because again, here, everybody is on a different playing field than the next. We're not your cookie cutter treatment center that is like herding cattle, you know, just go to group, pee in the cup, sign the sheet, you know, and go through the motions. We look at every single person on an individual level, and we see that a lot. And that's something that oftentimes we'll bring to their attention. Like, hey man, why are you spending so much time focusing on what Johnny over here is doing when you can be focusing on all these other things that you should be doing? And doing that in a tactful way, I think, is very important, and it helps people understand, like, this is my treatment. I need to utilize this time to work on myself, and I'm spending a lot of time and a lot of energy focusing on stuff that doesn't really matter. And I tell people this all the time. Chances are, if you're in treatment with 15 people, the 14 outside of yourself, you will lose communication with at some point in time. It's just fact. I mean, you may keep relationships with them for, you know, the next 6 months or whatever, but lo and behold, most people, they lose communication. They're not as friendly as they thought that they would be, so on and so forth.
Yeah, you got to learn how to make new relationships. I was just talking with someone about this the other day. Like, you know, there was people in my early recovery, my first couple of years, that were there all the time. And then over the course of time, it was replaced by another set of people in recovery. So as the years went on, it was almost as people would come and go in my life as I grew, you know. They're there for certain purposes. It's and you got to allow that to happen too. You know, and Tom was just touching on something that brings up a saying that I like. You know, the only thing that we can't give somebody is the willingness. It's the one thing that we don't have. And it's funny, because I went to a detox center yesterday to talk to two individuals, you know, and basically my approach with them is always the same, man. I sit down, I said, look, I'm not here to sell you on our program. I'm not going to sit here and talk about the features and benefits and beg you to come to our program. I straight up tell them, look, if the philosophy that I've explained to you is not something that you buy into, to be perfectly honest, we probably don't even want you. Like, because we want you to believe in what we're striving for. You know, we'll help you along with your recovery, but you got to bring the willingness yourself. You know, if and that's funny. Like, it's kind of funny sometimes. I'll sit down with individuals at detoxes that are interested in coming to our program, and you know, it's almost like, I feel like sometimes they think, this is my impression, I could be totally wrong, but I get the impression, they're like, they're doing me a favor by coming to our treatment program. I'm like, you know, you get that impression sometimes too, Tom? Well, he's nodding his head yes. You know, but the thing is like, at the end of the day, man, like, we're here to be part of that process. And if you're not bringing your A game, there's nothing that we can do for you anyway. I guarantee you 110%, if somebody comes to our program and does 90% of what we ask them to do, they're probably going to stay sober long term if they continue to do those things afterwards. You know, I mean, that's how this thing works. You know, for me, everybody knows I'm a big book guy through and through, 12 steps, Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe when people thoroughly do that stuff, it works 100% of the time, like, and continue to do it, man. Like, I share about that all the time. In my years of recovery, I've always attended meetings. I've always had at least 2 to 3 sponsees going through step work that I meet with every week. You know, it's a lot of work, but it's enjoyable, and it's not a task that I don't enjoy doing today. And that's the funny thing about it, you know, but you got to be open-minded and willing to do the work up front.
Yeah, we don't ask people to bring their A game, but definitely at least bring your C or B game. C's get degrees, you know?
C's get degrees.
It's something that, you know, if you come into this process and you're willing to do some work and you're willing to participate and, you know, be an asset to the community, not an asshole to the community, you'll be successful. And we provide people with everything that they need to be successful. And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest things for us is, it's not so much yes, Rock Recovery Center, we have a nice facility, but there's plenty of centers out there that are a lot nicer than ours. But it's the people that make the center. You know, it's not the building that we're in. It's not the gym that we provide. It's not the, you know, the housing that we provide or the nice swimming pool. It's the people that are inside the program, clients and staff. And that is what I think makes us as successful as we are, because everybody here is invested. And I think that's like going back to what you were saying. Some people feel like they're doing us a favor by coming to our treatment program. I don't know. I mean, I would say some people have that impression in the very beginning. And those people are the ones that have maybe been to 10 or 15 treatment centers prior to us, and they know that their insurance card, they could use it as like an Amex card. And if they don't like that place, they can just go to the next one because they have the good insurance. We're not that place. Like, just because you have the good insurance policy or you have the, you know, whatever the case is, doesn't mean that you have a spot here with us. Our community knows that. Our staff knows that. If you don't want to be sober, and this is just another step in your, you know, institutional journey, we're not it. People don't last long here.
I'll tell individuals that you're describing now, like, I'll tell them to kick rocks, and that may save their lives. You know, we may be the first place. We may not be. You know, I believe that there's a lot of treatment centers out there with good morals and ethics that'll say, man, I don't care what insurance you have. I don't care that your family paid cash, whatever the case is, dude. Like, kick rocks, man. Because it's funny, you mentioned the community and the therapeutic clinical team. You know, the truth of the matter is, I share this all the time. The funny thing is, the clinical team and the staff are always the last to know. You know, and that's the importance of community. The clients know all the little secrets about each other before we do, you know, and that's the importance of having a good community. We talk about negative contracts as another terminology we use in the addiction field. You know, when you know something, you're holding a secret back that could jeopardize somebody else's recovery, say it's your roommate, you know, and you're not telling the staff about a behavior that you're seeing that could potentially lead to relapse or whatever the case, risky behavior of some sort, you know. We got to get out of that jail prison mentality, snitches get stitches, right? Like, dude, we're here to help each other save each other's lives, because this thing is life or death, and community is so important. And I tell our clients, you're just as responsible, if not more responsible, for this community than we are. Because, man, those little talks you have with your roommate or your housemates or whatever the case may be, or those little rides in the van in the back, you know, and you're having these little conversations, you may get information that is vital to their recovery, you know, and it needs to come out clinically in most cases, not all, but most, 99.9, you know. But I like bringing that up, man, because there's the community has a responsibility for a treatment center and being efficient too. Is that the right way to put it? I guess.
Yeah, so. Efficient and successful. Absolutely. So, all right, that is it for this episode of Real Recovery Talk. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Just to recap, video games, Netflix, and chilling and all that stuff, that is something that's going to remove you from the tasks at hand. So make sure to stay focused, and, it's very important. clinical progress is something that you also need to make sure that you are doing, making progress with your therapist and with, you know, the case managers and everything, continuing to take steps forward, complete your assignments, build sober supports around you. And if you can't do all this stuff while you're in treatment, like I said, you sure as hell ain't going to do it whenever you leave treatment. So, Ben, any final thoughts?
No, I could keep going. There's so many good topics that are rattling around in my mind right now.
Well, write them down and we'll talk about them later.
Perfect.
All right, that is it. We will see y'all later.
You've been listening to Real Recovery Talk with Tom Conrad. If you'd like to have a confidential conversation about your specific situation, give Tom a call on his direct line at 561-220-7163. Or if you'd prefer, you can chat with Tom live at realrecoverytalk.com. As always, if this show is a benefit to you, please give it a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or wherever you discover your favorite podcasts. Thank you for being part of our mission to bring hope and healing to our loved ones struggling with addiction, as well as wisdom and comfort to those of us around them.